BMPs, or best management practices, are site-specific, and I'm going to talk about here how we go from site-specific management on the local scale within parts of a field, and how we learn from that and build a global database and a global program that we can all benefit from. So it's a kind of a stretching exercise, stretching your thinking, and hopefully stretching what we're going to do in the future. Precision farming technology helps farmers and their advisors implement 4R nutrient management stewardship, and I'll talk about 4R a little bit more if you haven't heard about that. It's kind of the theme that the fertilizer industry worldwide has adopted for improving management of nutrients. Precision technology helps to adapt those BMPs to the local soils, climates, and cultures. And culture is a big part of this when we start looking at the international side, and adapted anywhere in the world. Doesn't always have to mean satellites and computers. It's learning the unique details of your site, your fields, and then trying to work out the best management to use those unique resources to a little better advantage. I found this picture in an ad that I got from National Geographic a couple of weeks ago. And it really tells a story. The red coloring there indicates the global population density. So the darker the red, the more people. And it's obvious China and India, and we think about China as a fairly big country, but look that it's not all of China that's concentrated in some smaller areas of China, and the same with India. So India's probably a little more dense all over, but and there's some pockets in Africa and even some places in South America, North America, where there's population densities that are pretty high. The chances for every person to go out and grow their own food is pretty limited, I think, when we start looking at that. But this gives us a feel for what that current population is requiring. And if we look at that population doubling, as they're saying, in the next 20 years, tremendous opportunities. You think about just doubling food production, driving down the road, the number of grain bins you see. We'd have to have twice as many of those. Number of ships that we have hauling grain, twice as many of those. Number of trains, just to double that supply of production. So I don't think we've even started to grasp what the infrastructure changes that need to be made in the next 20 years to meet up with that demand. And it's also interesting to look at where this food's coming from. The arable land, the land that's capable of being farmed. The U.S. has by far got the biggest concentration, our biggest number of biggest units of land. India's fairly large. China, we start dropping off pretty fast before below the top five there. And Brazil, we talk, well, it's 65,000 hectares, but if Brazil doubled their production area, it's still smaller than those others. So our chances of doubling food production by doubling land area are pretty slim. So we're going to have to work on improving yields and improving management. And if we look at corn production, the U.S., 42%. China is 19%. Brazil, 6.6%. And it goes on down. So, again, opportunities for doubling that. It's an interesting thought process. As far as corn production on a metric ton basis, you can see the U.S. is way ahead of everybody else. And it's going to take a lot to have any of them catch up. So if the world food supply, the world supply of corn is going to be doubled, a lot of that's going to have to come from what we can do in this country, from both the land size and the fact of total production. We look at the trends in production, harvested area and the yield. You can see that those are going up. Yield's going up a little faster than harvested area, so we are improving our yields. This is Robert Fraley from Monsanto. He's Vice President of Technology. And this is a shot I took of him at the Farm Progress Show where he was talking about the need to double grain production from 2007 to 2030. And Monsanto and Syngenta, Pioneer, most of the main companies have been saying that they think they can do this. They think they can meet that challenge. But there's a lot that has to be done. Again, infrastructure, production-wise, we're going to put two ears on every stalk where we have one. We're going to put two stalks where there's one now. Those kind of things, it's going to be a big challenge. So I raised some questions in his presentation, and I argued with him a little bit afterwards, and he said, why don't you come down to St. Louis and let's talk about this. So hopefully we'll have some more dialogue. And I've talked with several people in Monsanto and some of the other companies, and there are some opportunities, I think, for all of us to work together and figure out how to make this happen, because we're going to need to make it happen. The yield trends, 1.8 bushel per acre per year the last 43 years since 1960. I graduated from high school in 66. Started working as extension corn specialist at Purdue in 74. And we were dreaming about possibly getting the U.S. corn average up to 100 bushels per acre at that point. And we're at 155 or 159, I think, is the last projection I saw. I'm not sure where it is for sure right now. Still half of what Bob Fraley was saying that we need to have, 300 bushels per acre by 2030. In order to meet those kinds of goals, we have to increase this trend of yield increase by about 3%, to be about 3%, to instead of 1.8 bushels per acre per year, 3% of 150, it's a bunch anyway, more than we've done. It's going to take the best agronomic science and the best agronomic management along with the best genetics, and that's the argument that I have, is that I don't think it can all be done with genetics. I stole this slide from Tony Vine, his presentation yesterday morning. Mike Edgerton also is one of the leaders, team leaders at Monsanto that's working on this. And Mike is projecting that, seeing the lower light green part, the contribution of agronomics versus biotechnology. And I don't doubt that biotechnology is going to have a fairly large part to play in doing this. But I do question whether they're giving enough credit to the agronomics that it's going to take to do that as well. To grow those bushels, to grow those extra yields, we're going to need a lot better agronomic systems in every field and continuously. So points for discussion, I guess, points for all of us to think about and to work on in order to help make all this happen. Well, site-specific management systems offer farmers and their advisors some of the best tools to help make this happen. And I'm going to use this illustration several times through the presentation here to just kind of keep, they say repetition's the way to teach people things, so I'm going to be repeating this a lot. But this is a little diagram that I actually drew on a napkin for a couple of my colleagues in 1994. We were getting ready to put on the first Precision Ag show at the Wisconsin Farm Progress Days up at Arlington, Wisconsin. And Bob Darst, who was our vice president from Atlanta, was up there, and he said, just what is this precision farming stuff? I haven't really heard much about it. So I drew it out on a napkin, and Bob stuck it in his pocket and took it down to Atlanta, and they used this as a centerfold in our Better Crops magazine. And it's been used around the world to illustrate what precision farming is all about. So I wish I would have signed a paper to get some royalties on it, but I didn't think ahead for that. So. There it is again. I've underlined systematically here, and I think that's the key thing. Precision farming helps us to take a more systematic approach to our management systems. We don't just focus on one aspect, but which we all tend to do. We get blinders on in our own little area. I think it's important to keep the whole system in mind and how one change in one area means changes in the other area and what the impact is on the whole production system. And the real power in all these various layers is using GIS analysis to determine what the interactions are among those. We can use it with research results. We can make better informed site-specific decisions. And we can start working on the 4R, or the right nutrient management. And the 4R system is based, as the center of this bullseye shows, getting the right source, the right rate, the right time, and the right place. But very carefully also looking at the interactions with the environmental aspects of our production system, the economics, and even the social aspects. And more, as we're as agriculture is a smaller percentage of the world, the social is becoming more dominant in some of the things we have to think about. We may have all the science behind us we want, but if people say, well, I just don't want you to do that, it still may have an impact on what our capabilities are. So we need to think about this as we look at the right source, what materials we're going to use, the right rate, the right place, both geographically within the field and also with respect to the seed, where we put our nutrients, and the right timing. Do we have enough of the right nutrients in the right place from the right source at all times throughout the growing season? And right along with that, we have a series of performance indicators. In the white area there, the cropping system objectives, we want to have a healthy environment, be profitable, be more productive, and have a durable system that's going to stick around. We're using durability in sort of a parallel to sustainability as a term for this. You can see all the other factors affecting the social, economic, and environmental aspects. So let's take a look at these individually. The right source, we need to ensure a balanced supply of all essential nutrients. And these are both from the soil, from commercial fertilizers, manure sources, and so forth. And then consider those characteristics to help meet the daily needs throughout the growing season. We often run into situations where the crop may actually be short on one particular nutrient only for a few days, but if it's a critical time, that could seriously affect what your yield potential is. I used to work with Stan Barber at Purdue, and by his calculations and his models, he would show that even a well-fertilized cornfield on very rapid growing days in midsummer could actually be short on phosphorus just because the phosphorus and the roots could not be, roots weren't growing fast enough, or the phosphorus wasn't moving fast enough to meet the supply. So it's important that we know what that need is and try to meet it. And that comes from regular scouting of the fields, plant analysis, maybe modeling. Placement choices can help us with that, and some of the new slow-release products and additives that are on the market now are all helping to provide the tools that we need to provide the right source. And then the right rate to be sure that we have the supply from the soil to meet the plant's demand. Things like soil testing, remote sensing, these are all the tools that we can use. GIS mapping, various models, GIS analysis, and variable rate application. Those can all help us to be sure that we get the right rate. And then the right time. We need to understand the dynamics of the crop uptake needs, the supplying power of the soil, and the logistics of the different field operations that impact nutrient availability. And that will help us then determine when the potential risks for nutrient losses are as well, affecting the environmental aspects. And again, we have a lot of tools. Some of these are high-tech tools, some are fairly low-tech tools, like the little paper, chemically treated paper there that we can use for tissue analysis in midsummer, the CARDI meters, the SPAD meters, and so forth. These are all things that can help us, and some require fairly low technology to put them into use. The right place, again, we need to understand the root soil dynamics and meet those site-specific needs of the crop and limit the potential losses from the field. Again, models come into play, GIS, digital soil survey. You can see a recurring theme here, information. Growing a crop anymore is much more information management than we used to. We have more information available, we can get more information, and we need to make use of that in our decision processes. And really, it's the interactions that become more important and are often the most likely to be ignored. Getting the right source, rate, time, and place is part of it, but then those are all interdependent on one another as we put a management system together. So need to think about those interactions among the various parts of that management system. And then how they can be used with our technology tools to come up with the right rate in the field. I need to find a better copy of this picture, but I thought it was really a very good illustration of what precision farming can do. This is a fluid lime application on a field near Champaign, Illinois. And you can see the real bright white area there is where we had heavier rates. And there's areas that had lighter rates and areas that had none applied. It basically recreated the pH map out on that field. Can't see that with P and K and other inputs, but it really shows up well in this one. So I like that illustration. Taking a step further, I want to get into a program that we're starting with IPNI, and that's ecological intensification. Those of you from Nebraska are familiar with this, I hope, and you helped put it together. So if you have anything to add, be sure to do that. But ecological intensification defines a production system and satisfies that anticipated need in increasing food demand and the standards for environmental quality. So both providing increased supply and also doing it in an environmentally sound way is all encompassed in that EI term. And with IPNI being a global program, we looked at this as an opportunity to take one crop, and we selected maize to start with. All the main production areas in the world where maize is grown, where we have offices, we are setting up sites where we can set this global maize program in place. And the yellow dots there show where our staff locations are. They're not showing up real brightly on this projector, but we have roughly 10 programs in place, and we're trying to get one established sometime in the next few months in Africa to expand that. We just started one the 1st of October in Australia. We've a new program in Eastern Europe in Moscow, and because it's new, we don't have a global maize project there, but we have 14 sites around the world now where we have this project established and ready to move forward. And the red stars, which also aren't showing up on this picture, but indicate where those are. We have two in the U.S., one at Purdue University and one at Iowa State. We have two in Mexico, two in Brazil, two in Argentina, two in India, two in China, and two in Southeast Asia to start with. The Russian group, I just got an email about a half hour ago from them. They say they want to start one, and they're going to find the money for it. So it'll be good if we can get that going. And maybe in Africa as that program gets established as well. So basically, it's a global program looking at production systems as they are in the different parts of the world, and looking at all size farms, all cultures of production. You don't have to have the big green John Deere equipment. It's the concept will fit equally well in the hand production systems in some of the developing countries. But the important thing is to look at the global impact, both economic, social, and environmental, that we can have with improving our production systems and increasing the yield opportunities. Again, back to the database and the illustration. Each of these layers actually represents multiple layers of information that can go into a local database for each field, no matter where you are in the world, and then be used to make decisions for planting, fertilizer application, other production practices, and checking it with harvest and field observations. So this project has a series of objectives. The first is to create a global research and extension network to focus on narrowing the yield gap. It's a capacity building project that goes over a number of years. Along with that will be a global network of research sites and scientists and a global network of producers and their advisors on the real-world field application. Second objective is to identify local factors that comprise the EI management system. Third, to conduct a global assessment of current farming practices and what an ecological intensification management system would look like for that local series of conditions and cultures. Fourth, to use EI practices and nutrient management support tools to improve yields and efficient use of resources. One of these would be a model that we'll talk about in a little bit. And then this will lead to a lot of data, a lot of information, and probably the more important objective is number five, to work out a system to curate and manage the data that's collected. And one of the big problems we have even on individual farms is how do we manage the data, how do we use the data, how do we get the most information out of it? Multiply that, scale it up on a global basis, and you see the kind of problem that we have crossing political and cultural boundaries. But I think it's a challenge that's certainly worth taking some effort in trying to do. So this part is a long-term part, but it hopefully will have the biggest impact on our management systems in the future. So to define the yield gap, we look at what is the gap? What's the difference between the current practices and yields on the farm, and what's possible for the particular environment that we're looking at? Then what steps are necessary to narrow that yield gap, increase yields, and increase to a level that's agronomically possible and still be ecologically responsible in the process. And all in keeping in mind that this yield gap analysis and the steps it takes to put it in effect are going to be site-specific. Combination of tools and data that are part of this precision farming technology will help the farmers to identify and implement the real best management practices for their area. And again, it may be models, databases, mapping, soil survey information, all of the various pieces of the puzzle that can be put together to improve management. Better technology means better data, and underlying that site-specific decision-making process are those databases, and those are possible through the development of technology, combining the GIS, the sensors, record-keeping, and various kinds of monitoring. Whether it's the Veris system, the GreenSeeker, GIS-based sampling, the simple tissue tests, or a little more complicated tissue tests, or the variable rate technology to apply the fertilizer. These are all part of that system. Another part of the Global Maize Project is looking at on-farm research. And for that, we're using what we call emission plots, where you put a system together that has treatments where all nutrients are at ample supplies, and then we drop one out in each of the other plots. And using those emission plots, we can look at different nutrients and determine what the crop's response is to soil fertility, which nutrients are most limiting, and what combination of each nutrient will contribute, or what the contribution of each nutrient will be to the crop yield. Putting the right rate in the right place through variable rate application. For example, we take this Illinois 90-acre field showing a map of the soil test areas. The yield goal of 200 bushels per acre corn and 60 bushels soybeans. The K recommendations on this basis would be that 13% of that field, the white areas, need no potash fertilizer. 30% need only a maintenance rate, just replacing removal. But 47% actually needed a buildup rate. And this variability was not noted until we got the GIS map of that system. Or this Indiana field where field average was 170 parts per million. Potash total application needed was none. It had enough potash. But if we did the site specific and divided up by management zones, we had a range of 111 to 279. total needs of 10,000 pounds of K in that field. So site-specific opened up an opportunity for improving yields for the farmer, improving a market for the fertilizer dealer. On-farm research is a key part of an improved management system. It builds a local database and helps us to fine-tune the recommendations. So this is a program that we put together a few years back with ArcView, and it's called Enhanced Farm Research Analyst. And we basically took an area of the field and established two treatments. One rate of 108 pounds per acre and 325. And then that was put in place by the normal fertilizer spreader. It was harvested with the normal combine, and through the computer we could pick out the plots and do the analysis. So it's a simple way that on-farm research can be done with conventional equipment that the farmer would have. And here's the results of that test. What we're trying to do is compare the normal soil test level that the university recommended and then doubling that. And as you can see here, the potash test, for example, 161 was the standard, and we got it up to 237. It wasn't quite double. Corn yields, you can see, went from 152 on the standard rate to 190. So we did have an increased yield by going to the higher fertility level. In fact, 38 bushels or 2.3 tons per hectare more corn. Now, interestingly enough, the yields on soybeans the following year are exactly the same, so we didn't have an impact on soybeans, but we did pick up a sizable impact on the corn. Remote sensing is another tool. We can assess, looking just at the variability in the field, and assess what maybe drainage problems, maybe it's previous crop, whatever. Once we have these images, there's a lot of analysis we can do and tie those in with the other databases. Potential uses might be in detecting stress, looking for pest problems, nutrient deficiencies, or looking for areas that need drainage repairs. Long-term research is an important part as well as the on-farm research. And long-term studies like the Morrill plots at the University of Illinois, where we have an area that's been in production since 1876 with no fertilizer, and an area right next to it, same term of production, but has had a good fertility program. This has been in continuous corn since 1876. New record yield in 2003 was 264 bushels per acre. Wasn't actually the continuous corn, it was the rotation plots that got that higher yield. The important thing, though, is that we need long-term studies like this because some of the things that we need to measure are not short-term impacts, and it's very seldom that we can get a long-term study established anymore or funded, but it's an important part of management systems. And then we take all this information and we develop a decision support system using site-specific precision farming technologies in making those decisions, again, agronomic, economic, and environmental impacts. Maybe hybrid selection is one of them. Local trials, on-farm evaluation, and university and industry trials. Technology used for that would be yield monitors and GIS records, for example. Seeding rates based on university recommendations and again on your own long on-farm trials. A planter monitor and a variable rate planter be used. Fertilizer rates. Start with the official recommendations from the university. Look at any current research to see if there's any potential changes. On-farm trials and omission plots on your own farm may help you adjust that to local conditions. And then in-season monitoring and management using these various tools can help us to adjust those official recommendations to tailor it for your own operation. Collecting information on a global basis then, we're hoping to be able to draw some curves like this relating soil test level to potential yield responses. Some of this analysis can be done on a global basis if we have those large databases that we're cooperating on. Decision support tools include models, include spreadsheet analysis, includes other software that we might have to help make those decisions. The hybrid maze model we're using in this project, developed at the University of Nebraska, to provide an evaluation of the local climate and its impact on maize production and potential. And it gives you a growth response curves. It gives you a collection of weather data. Running this model for different areas around the world, we're trying to establish what the potential yield is for those different parts of the world. And then we put a database together using the soil survey information, information about the previous crop, the hybrid, all the physical and management factors that go into a production system. The fertilizer rate map based on our some of the previous information there, and previous year's yield maps. Plug those into various analytical tools, and we come up with a profit map, which we can do before the season. We can project what the profit's going to be, and after the season, we can measure what the actual was and do a comparison on that. It's looking at the fundamental principles of economics of a production system, where an increment of increase in fertilizer input, for example, if you're on this part of the curve, gives you this much increment in yield increase. As we move up on the flatter part of the curve, you can see that the same increment of increase in input gives us a smaller increase in yield. So we get a year like the last couple of years have been where farmers cut back on their fertilizer inputs. If they're already up on this part of the curve, their potential yield loss from that kind of change isn't very large. Farmers who are down here on this part of the curve, though, as they drop the same level of inputs, have a potential risk that's much greater. So this is all, again, part of the analysis we can do for each field or each part of the field as we look at the data. We need to look at the leaders, the people who are pushing the envelope, and see what we can learn from them. Herman Warsaw, 1985, produced 370 bushels per acre of corn. What was he doing that was different? Well, he's farming 28-inch rows, so he had narrower rows. He had higher fertility than was recommended at that point. The big thing was he spent every day out in the cornfield looking at what was going on. He knew he was following what his field was doing. He knew what was going on. We have Kip Cullors a little more recently here in 2007. Produced 154 bushels of soybeans in southwest Missouri. Look at the number of pods on that field. Kip says one of his secrets is that he's learned how to keep those flowers from aborting and get more of them to turn into pods and soybeans. He doesn't give out all the secrets of how he did that, but it shows that the potential's there. So there's more potential than most farmers are gaining, and what can we do to help reach those goals? It's details of that fine tuning of your management system. So the precision ag tools are more than the equipment. It's the decision support. It's integrating the data, the models, the maps, putting it all together into better informed management decisions. Scaling trends are really kind of two opposing directions here. We can take our state and regional recommendations for nutrient management and scale those up to larger areas. Many cases like the Indiana, Ohio, Michigan tri-state recommendation. That's hardly going in the right direction for site-specific management, but it's another form of scaling. Large area adaptation of hybrids. A lot of companies are looking for hybrids that will be adapted to the largest areas. They're not going for the niche markets as much as they are looking for something that has a broader area, a broader market base. Going the other way, we can scale down, looking at local recommendations, site-specific management, locally adapted genotypes. Some smaller companies are focusing on that and getting a better shot at the local markets. This requires more intensive management, more data, and it reduces the economies of scale that the folks up here are taking advantage of. So there's two ways. I'm not saying either one of those is wrong. It's two ways that we can look at this scaling question. Then we try to adapt that field scale to a global scale. We need to do that one field at a time. And basically, applying site-specific management on a local scale throughout the world, and then creating those aggregated benefits that come to a better situation on a global basis. And as more farmers adapt better informed decision-making, that should improve our benefits to agriculture and to society, both on the local scale and on the global scale. And it really fits both small farms and large farms. Each field, in this case, may be a management zone, where in this case, each field has a multiple management zones. But the concept fits, even though the tools that are used may be different. And sometimes it fits where you have small fields within big fields. Like this, I call it the Pac-Man Storage Center of North Texas. Some of you probably aren't old enough to remember Pac-Man, but that's what it looks like when you fly over it. So you've got here the opportunity to manage different parts of a center pivot based on maybe different crops or different soil situations. The point is adapting to fit your local situation. And it all comes back down to information management. That's the component that we can work with on a global basis. Whether it's soil survey information, yield history, weather data, those all go into the models. And adapting the same models to areas around the world, we can look at the current season and also look at past seasons and do comparisons. Soil tests and fertilizer applications, production practice records, scouting, spending the time out in the field. And this is where some of the smaller farmers may be better. They've got more time and more ability to be out in the field looking at the field every day compared to a 20,000 acre farmer that's trying to cover it all. Plant analysis, harvest data, these are all things, but maybe the last line here is the most important, the data storage, the backups, and the analysis of that data, and then aggregating those databases on a global basis. And that's another part of our Global Maize project, as we put together what we are calling our research and education network, with our sites in North America and South America, all feeding information into this data network, the Asian countries, and as we add the European and Africa, we can get more. Bringing all that information together in a global network, I think, gives us a new level of power of analysis and understanding of how this crop responds in different situations. And the data curation, putting it together in a multiple or a large database with multiple sources, is no small task. But here's the vision that my buddy Scott here has come up with, at least putting together how we can collect all that information, run it through various cooperators, a central processing system, and then global evaluation and analysis. And we're looking at the possibility of teaming up with basically a national network involving several universities here, focusing on Purdue and our Global Maize Network, putting this together, and it's called the Nano Hub project at Purdue. Paul Fixon talked about that in a little more detail the other day. And then we're also looking at other sources, like in South America, we have this program called CREA. It's made up of 196 groups, 18 regions, more than 1,832 farmers with 180 technical agronomists providing input. More than 4.5 million hectares is devoted to these farms, and it amounts to, depending on the crop, 6 to 20% of the domestic production for Argentina. And this program is going in some other countries. It started back in the 50s in France. And this type of program, we have several in the U.S. that are doing similar things, but linking those into our global network of information, I think, gives us another level of power of information to come into this process. The most productive land's already being used. What's the potential for increasing yields on that? Can we increase those yields and avoid putting some of the more marginal land into production? And really, it's higher yields that's what's going to improve the efficiency. That's what agronomists are supposed to be good at, so we need to get on with the program and get it done. Need to think about systems management to put the right components in the right decisions, how they interact, and then look at the results in agronomic responses, economic evaluation, and the environmental consequences. With that, I'd say thank you, and one more look at the illustration of precision farming and how that's going to help us meet the world's food problems.